I'm Joshua Marefchik. I'm a specialist in international relations and U.S. foreign policy. I'm a fellow at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. Mostly I study these subjects, and I have written many books and many articles about international relations, many recently about the Middle East. And I also write a column for one Egyptian magazine as part of my effort to engage with the Middle East. There's an Egyptian magazine called Asi Asi, and I write a column for them twice a month. On the deepest basis, the solution is for people to embrace the idea that we will always have differences between us, with different identities and different ideas and different interests, and that it's much better for everyone if we learn to try to negotiate our differences in peaceful ways by arguing about them or voting about them. And this is true on all levels, I think. It's true within families. It's true within countries, from one group to another, one person to another. And I think it's also true between countries. How to get people to behave this way is, in a sense, you know, the $64,000 question. But I think one thing which has interested me in my work, a large part of my work has been around trying to encourage the spread of democracy in the world. And the reason why I think democracy is so important is precisely because democracy is the way of resolving differences peacefully. In any country in the world, in any society, in any city, in any town, in any group, there are going to be many different opinions and many different interests. I think it's important to get people to think at the most deep level of what our religion and what God wants from us, whether it's we have the different faiths, we have the three Abrahamic faiths, and there are other faiths in other parts of the world. And of course, each one of us believes that ours is true, but I believe also that, you know, we human beings are imperfect in every way, including in our ability to understand things. So we're all trying to understand God, understand who He is, what He is, what He wants from us. But we are working with our very limited human capacities. And I think that's why we have different religions. It's kind of different efforts to try to comprehend something that is really above us. And in the end, we cannot comprehend perfectly. We have to strive to comprehend it as best we can. And the most fundamental thing that God wants from us, regardless of which faith, is to try to be more holy in our own lives. Holiness, of course, includes our reverence for God, but it must also include our behavior toward other human beings. And a funny thing happens, because religion ought to lift us all up, even if we have somewhat different understandings. It ought to lift us up to try to find the best inside ourselves. We get lost and say, well, this one is part of my religion and you're a different religion, so therefore I have to fight you. But it can't possibly be that is what God wants from us. I think it's been a terrible shame that the United States has not involved itself more to stop the Syrian government from killing its own people. Right now in Syria, there's violence in both directions, and there's a lot of violence, including terrorism, by some of the forces against the Assad regime. But this took a long time. For months and months, starting at the beginning of 2011, the Syrian people were demonstrating peacefully for their rights and for the ability to choose their own government. And the regime was killing these peaceful demonstrators. After some hundreds or thousands had been killed, then the opposition to the regime began to arm itself and to fight back violently. So now we have a conflict that's violent in both directions. I think that the outside the West, together with Turkey, who has been the one outside country that's taken the greatest burden until now, together with NATO, should just, I think it's not a matter of sending in troops, but at this point, the Syrian government has fewer and fewer soldiers who are loyal to the regime, because you can go anywhere in the world. Soldiers don't like to be told to shoot their own countrymen and their own brothers and cousins. Nowhere. So there are fewer and fewer Syrian soldiers who are loyal to Assad, and instead the regime is relying more and more on airplanes and helicopters and weapons like that. If the NATO countries, means U.S., Turkey, the other Europeans, said no fly zone, it's not a matter of sending our own troops in there, but just we will not let you fly these airplanes and helicopters. I think that would probably be the end of the civil war. I think, I feel a terrible sense of deja vu. Because in the 1990s, I've, in my career, because I deal with many different U.S. foreign policy issues, I've dealt with crises in different parts of the world. And from 1992 until 95, my main focus was on Bosnia. And there, it was a similar situation in which the Bosnian Serbs, who were really, in effect, the Serbian government, had all these heavy weapons and were firing into Sarajevo and other places, killing the Bosniak Muslims as well as some Croatians. The U.S., under two presidents, did not want to get involved. But it was a terrible mistake at that point. We had to get involved. Of course, when there's a fight going on, you never want to get involved. It's far away from here. Why should we get involved? But the fact is that the U.S. is the world's superpower. A lot of places in the world, America is the only one that can bring a fight to an end if we do it. And of course, a lot of times people get angry at us, but this is, this is the price we have to pay for being who we are. And I know I was writing as many articles as I could back then, saying we have to stop this killing in Boston. And people were saying, it's so messy, if we get involved, it won't solve the problem, it will just be more killing and so on. We waited for 3.5 years. And during those 3.5 years, we don't know how many, 100,000 people died, 200,000 people died. When finally we made the decision to get involved, again, we didn't put soldiers in. We did it with the air. When we finally got involved, the war ended very quickly. It didn't make it worse. It made it much better. And all those people who died in the meantime didn't have to die if we had done it sooner. Already too many people have died in Syria. And I'm hearing, you know, here the same sort of excuses for why we can't do it, why we shouldn't do it. But I don't believe any of them. I think if we do it, we can end this problem pretty quickly. I think we're going into an area in which I don't know enough. I don't know as much as I wish I did. And we've seen a lot of terrorism coming from residents of Muslim countries. I'm quick to say not all violence comes from there, and not all of the people there are violent, but a large share of the violence that we've seen in the world and has come from these countries. And even though it doesn't represent the majority of the people, we see that the number of terrorists is very small. It's a few hundred people, a few thousand people. But then we see there's another group. It's also a minority, but when you have a public opinion poll, there's another group of 10% or 15% who sympathize with what the terrorists do. Not in every country, but for example, in Egypt or Jordan, in a lot of the Middle Eastern countries we see. And of course, what these terrorists do is so, A, it's so ugly, and B, it's so stupid. Did Osama bin Laden really think he was going to overthrow the United States? I mean, you have to not only be immoral, but also really an idiot to think that. So why this crazy way of thinking? I do think there's, in at least a lot of the Muslim countries, a kind of widespread discontent. You know, why in this era, why is the West so strong and we are weak? Why is the West sort of dominant and we're trailing behind? And of course, in some sense, no one knows. And if you look back over history, in a long perspective of hundreds and hundreds of years, there have been long periods when the Muslim world was much stronger than the Christian world. And so why that in one era and something else in another era, I don't know. But I think that sense, combined with some of the history of Western imperialism in the 19th and 20th centuries, so that the West were conquerors or colonizers, left a certain legacy of anger and bitterness, but it. But ultimately, it doesn't make any sense. If you feel as if, you know, my country is poor and that country is rich, or my country is weak and that country is strong, the question is for people, and it's not just a Muslim thing, for people look around the world, the countries that are less developed, poorer, less powerful, I understand why they don't like that. But then the question is, how can they build themselves up, not tear someone else down? Your second question, there is an irony that, you know, with all the conflict that we've seen involving Muslims and Jews and Christians. The irony is that we are, of course, all a part of the same family. That it's all one story that starts with Abraham. Yes. And it would seem even if we have somewhat divergent versions of this story, of what came next, it's still, when we think our way back, we're part of the same family, and so it should be something that will bring us together. Of course, it is a natural part of the weakness of human beings that we often have a tendency to fight with those who are closest to us. And if we read the Bible or the Quran, if we read the holy books that go back to the story of Abraham, we see many stories of brothers who fought each other for reasons why at least you know, I'm a Jew and I'm most familiar with the Jewish Bible. The reasons aren't really explained or explained just a little bit. They don't go much beyond saying one brother was jealous of the other. But each time these brothers fought each other, it led to the detriment of both of them. And so I think part of it may be our natural human weakness, but I think part of what God is trying to teach us is that we have to learn how to do better than to fight our brothers. We have to learn how to enjoy and love our brothers. I think there are many things we have to do. One is, there are people who are espousing very harmful ideas. By harmful ideas, I mean supporting violence, or that one group should kill or suppress another group. And there are other people who don't necessarily espouse that, but who, in a sense, help them by making excuses for this. And this has to be fought on an intellectual level. This has fight with words, with the writing, try to show why this is, with talking, with broadcasting, to try to show why these ideas are wrong. But secondly, we have to try to influence people on other levels. And that's why I have spent so much of my work on the question of democracy. I don't think democracy is in itself the answer to all problems, but I think people sometimes misunderstand when they think of democracy as only a way to choose governments. Of course, that's what it is. It's a way to choose governments. But it's something deeper than that, which is, it's also a way to express a philosophy that differences must be resolved peacefully. And I do think that when people have the experience of living in democracy, that it also is, democracy itself is like a form of education. People learn about compromise. They learn that it's, you don't have to win everything, and certainly not, you don't have to win everything today. That if you want one thing and the others want something else, if you get part of what you want, that's good. Okay, you can still hope maybe later you will get more, but you have to learn a certain patience. And this has a political side to it. Of course, it's also true in our religious faiths, which is our faiths teach us two things. One is, we won't always have everything we want. But one thing that our faith teaches us is to be grateful for God, to God, for what we do have. Don't ever forget the value of what we have, even if there's something we don't have. And secondly, to maintain hopefulness that in time God may give us more of what we want. That things can change. And I think that there's a kind of way of each of us approaching our own lives that, on the one hand, you know, has very basic religious meaning, but we can also find this in our political acts. And in other acts in our lives, in our personal lives, I think, you know, this is, you know, maybe, you know, more primary than politics, but it's all related. How do we treat the other people in our lives? How do we treat our wives? How do we treat our children, our parents, our brothers, then our neighbors? These things seem to me really basic, and that there's not a strict separation. We have to learn that there's a kind of continuum between trying to be good people, which is what God wants of us, in our personal lives, with the other people that we actually know and meet, and the people that depend on us the way our families do, as well as people more far away that we don't meet but are in our country or in our world, and our actions can affect them, and we have to live in the same world with them, and try to find ways to do it that will be most beneficial for both sides.